You might be wondering what theology and Joni Mitchell have in common. Like all questions of faith, it begins with a longing, a search for truths beyond one's own understanding. For me, that search first became real in my grandmother's library. As a child, I would watch her reading in a pool of lamplight, a leather-bound Bible in her lap, with pages so thin you could see through them, and letters so tiny she needed a magnifying glass. "You'll always find the answers you need in here," she told me, "no matter what the question." So, did that make the Bible like the magic eight ball? I hoped it had better answers than "my sources say no" and "signs point to yes." There were Christian comic books on my nightstand, stories about Ruth and Boaz, Moses and the basket, Jesus in the tomb. I never missed a Sunday school class, and youth group was often the highlight of my preteen week. But as the seasons went round and round, the more illusions I recall. If God is love, as the bumper stickers say, then why threaten us with the eternal flames of hell? And what is this obsession with sexual morality, especially when there were leaders on the national stage and at some of my youth retreats who were clearly not practicing what they preached? Then came AIDS and trickle-down economics, proof that the so-called moral majority was anything but. I mean, didn't Jesus heal the lepers and bless the poor? When I went to college at 17, I was lucky to be on a big campus, about 12,000 undergraduates. That gave me enough cover to try on different personalities for size, to question everything, and to search for the truth, unless, of course, that truth was to be found in an actual classroom. Like Mark Twain, I didn't allow schooling to get in the way of my education. I searched in the pages of books, Maestra Eckhart, Carlos Castaneda, Maya Angelou. I looked on the sawdust floors of the frat houses. It wasn't there, I'm here to tell you. On the trails of the Blue Ridge Mountains, on stage performing obscure German dramas. There were new alternative bands playing on campus radio, as well as new to me classic rock and folk. 17 years of Broadway tunes, classical piano, patriotic hymns, and mainstream 80s pop left me blissfully unaware of the transgressive counterculture. I mean, I knew who the Beatles were and who David Bowie was, but I had never heard of the Grateful Dead or the Velvet Underground. And in one particularly humiliating experience at a dive bar in Charlottesville, I told the guitarist that his songwriting was inspired, only to find out he'd been playing Van Morrison covers the whole night. So I say all this to give you an idea of my state of mind when my girlfriend turned me on to Joni Mitchell. The album Blue was my first taste of this blonde bombshell with a wind chime laugh and a poison dart pen. I fell into the sinking sand of her back catalog and never quite made it out. Her lyrics, and I know I'm not alone, seemed to speak directly to me. I felt seen in a way that was quasi-religious, like she was trespassing on my soul. But let's back up a minute. Who is Joni Mitchell? Indulge me as I run through a few of her milestones. Born with the sun in Scorpio in 1943, Joni was a freckle-faced tomboy on the Canadian prairie who got polio at 9 and had to learn to walk again. An outgoing teenager who learned to play the ukulele so she could play Kingston Trio songs at the Wiener Roast. An art school dropout who started gigging at folk clubs so she didn't have to tell her parents she was pregnant. A 23-year-old divorcee, David Crosby, used to trot out at people's parties just to see the jaws drop when she performed. A songwriter who defined the Woodstock generation but didn't even play the gig. A woman who had love affairs with the greatest artists of her time and paid the price. Rolling Stone magazine in 1971 published a flowchart of the folk and rock scene and connected her with, you know, David Crosby and James Taylor with little kissy mouths. So they didn't do that to Mick Jagger, I'm just telling you. A hermit hiding out on the Canadian coast when the roller coaster of the music business made her blue. an LA transplant who never missed an opportunity to rail against the star maker machinery, a canary in the ecological coal mine way before her time, and a musical pioneer, always the critically acclaimed bridesmaid, but never the top 40 bride. She's a consummate performer still today, making music and drawing crowds at 81. If you haven't seen it, the Newport Folk Festival 2022, her revival, it's worth a watch. That brings us back to the question, what does Joni Mitchell have to do with theology? For someone who grew up with all the moral absolutes and certainties of organized religion, it was revelatory, if not to say reassuring, to find someone so at ease with her doubt. Joni identified with biblical outsiders like Job and Zacchaeus. She admitted to being frightened by the devil, but drawn to those who aren't afraid. And she may not have agreed with her contemporaries that hell's the hippest way to go, but she was going to take a look around first. I saw myself in this woman who still went to her knees but wondered where the prayers had to go, with heaven full of astronauts and the Lord on death row. So Joni didn't exactly replace religion for me, nor did she drive me away from it. But when I couldn't find the answers I was looking for in the pages of dusty books, in the pews of a church, at the bottom of a solo cup, or in the arms of another sweet-talking ladies' man, Joni gave me something to believe in. This is still true today. After lapsing in my Mitchellist faith during my 40s, because not everyone, you'll be surprised to hear, enjoys her music. There are even some who shall remain nameless that refer to her three-octave vocal gymnastics as wailing. But now, empty-nested and armed with AirPods, I have found my way back to her music and to her theology. That's what makes her so unique, isn't it? Her music is just as powerful for a woman on the far side of midlife as it is for newcomers to the carousel of time. Maybe even more so now that we no longer have moons in our eyes. But what is it about her message that resonates? What is the gospel according to Joni Mitchell? Which probably would have been a better title for the address. Four key themes I've boiled it down to. The first is the sacrament of confession. Joni put everything out there, warts and all. Her passion, her jealousy, her beauty, her pettiness, her anger, and her dreams. She never felt the need to apologize for containing multitudes. I think we forget how revolutionary it was to sing with such raw honesty. These days, popular figures like Annie Lamott, Glennon Doyle, Hannah Gadsby, and even Taylor Swift celebrate the messiness of their lives with anyone who will listen. But Joni was a pioneer in confessional art. There was a humor in it, a self-effacing quality that didn't make you roll your eyes. According to Joni, it started as a defense mechanism, a knee-jerk response to fame. You want to worship me? Then you should probably know who you're putting up on that pedestal. But instead of demystifying her as a person, these songs, like all good art, held up a mirror to us, implored us to want what we want, love who we love, own up to our mistakes and eccentricities, and maybe even rant a little once in a while. In the Gospel according to Joni, the sacrament of confession is not about punishing you. It's about making your flawed self a more hospitable home. And in turn, encouraging others to embrace their own imperfections. The second theme deals with the rites of pilgrimage and retreat. Reading the news in a Paris park, romancing Carrie on a Grecian isle, crisscrossing the country on a self-styled hegira. There's no question that traveling was a powerful muse for Joni Mitchell. She found inspiration on the road, imagery and anecdotes with hidden universal meaning that made her songs into parables. But she also understood the magnetic force of home. She knew that rest and seclusion could fill your creative tank like nothing else. You can't help but long for home when Joni sings California, no matter where you are. And when the success of the album Blue sent her into a spiral, she retreated to Canada's Sunshine Coast. Healing came with living alone in a cottage without electricity, skinny dipping under the waterfalls and springing from the boulders like a mama lion. In the Gospel according to Joni, these outward and inward journeys are sacred rites held in tender balance, two halves of a potent antidepressant, neither complete without the other. The third theme is the call to stewardship and activism. Coming of age in the 1960s, Joni Mitchell experienced her share of protests and protest songs. But there are few songwriters of any generation who can shine a light on injustice with such wit and passion. Her battles become our battles. How can we stop the parking lots from paving over paradise? How can we sit quietly at a banquet where some get the gravy, some get the gristle, some get the marrow bone, and some get nothing, though there's plenty to spare? The list goes on. Vets with PTSD, so-called fallen women imprisoned in the Magdalene laundries. That song was 1994, very early. Abused children in foster homes, AIDS victims, corporate greed. Joni Mitchell never shied away from an opportunity to sing truth to power. For all the navel-gazing and romanticizing she's famous for, the gospel according to Joni reminds us that caring for God's creation and giving voice to the voiceless is our highest calling. The final of our four themes is perhaps Joni's most enduring, certainly for me. It wrestles with the forever dilemma of freedom. If there's one question that persists across her entire catalog, it is this. Can you live a life of creative and personal freedom and still participate in society? Still enjoy professional success? Still find a love that sticks around? When she watches a busker in the song For Free, Joni craves a purer form of her art. Nobody stopped to hear him, though he played so sweet and high. They knew he had never been on their TV, so they passed his music by. How long, she wonders, in the classic tune Free Man in Paris, can a person go from cafe to cabaret, feeling unfettered and alive, before they get sucked back into reality's cogs and wheels? But for Joni, there is no dilemma quite like the dilemma of love. Is it an engine or an obstacle for creative expression and ambition? In the tune Help Me, falling in love again is not necessarily a cause for celebration. She and her man love our lovin', but not like we love our freedom. Why do we always fall into the trap, she describes in the song All I Want? I hate you some, I love you some, I love you when I forget about me. It seems pretty clear that the line she repeats over and over at the end of that song, I want to make you feel free, is more likely an invocation for someone else to make her feel free. Of life's most existential questions, this is one of the sticky ones that defies answering. In the gospel according to Joni, it becomes kind of a litany repeated through the generations, a Zen koan that especially women of heart and mind everywhere return to. In closing, let me just say how grateful I am for Joni Mitchell's music, for peeling the scales from my eyes, for being my gateway drug to Unitarianism. Here, I found a spiritual home where everything is legitimate in your search for the truth, just the way it was for Joni. Buddhism and the Bible, LSD and love affairs, activism and arcane forms of music, poetry and philosophy. They all hold fragments of the answers we seek. Joni Mitchell is no messiah, but she has, for many of us, become a prophet, a fellow pilgrim out on the lonely road. Divinely inspired and deliciously human, her songs form a scripture that has never failed me, but also never fails to challenge me. May you also find in her songs a psalm for your own journey, questions and hearts open, voices unafraid. Amen.